Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're going to be here at 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. And we'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. You guys have heard the ads we're running from Ronnie DeMeo. Figured I'd quickly explain them for you just a little bit. So we picked up this new client, and they were configured with their stuff in the cloud. And they were very upset with the performance of the software that was placed in the cloud by this other IT provider. And, I mean, everything they did with it, with their software in the cloud took just hours to process and produce versus when it was local in their shop, it just took minutes. And the IT guys that were servicing them threw their stuff in the cloud and then eventually lost 12 weeks worth of data trying to make the thing work. And so of course this company, you know, the construction company wanted to fire the IT guys, but in order to get their data off the cloud, they had to pay a kind of a ransom. They had to pay for the services that were so bad in the cloud before the IT guys that they were using would release their data back to them. So it's a bit of a warning. I mean, the cloud can work. We're not saying it can't, but this we've seen this in a bunch of places. You know, if your IT guy holds the keys to your castle in his cloud and you want to leave, good luck. Because if they're not scrupulous or have no business ethics at all, they're literally going to force you to pay for something that harmed you before they give you your data back. And that's what happened in this case. So
we had another software provider that chose to upgrade and install a new server rather than move into the cloud, because when they did the cost-benefit analysis, they found the return was in 1 year would offset the cost of the new server.
Right. So, again, much cheaper to be local and just in the system. So I just want to explain that commercial. There are some solutions in the cloud that do work, but you need to be sure that if you want to leave your IT provider, if that guy or company has put your stuff in their cloud and you're not happy with it, you know, you're going to have to pay for the poor service to get your stuff back, whether it worked or not.
You got to pay to put it in. You got to pay to take it out.
But if it's in your own shop, you seem to have control over it. Let's go to your calls now. We're just going to go to who's been on the line longer. We've got Paul in Litchfield. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Good morning. I thought you guys forgot about me there for a while.
Well, we got a lot of calls, Paul. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's a good show as usual.
Thank you.
I listen to Rush. All right. Every day, and he really got into this Boeing 737 thing.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was confused me is they talked about the nose gear was like 8 or 10 inches longer, 18 inches longer than the original. And I mean, I'm no aviation expert by any stretch of imagination, but I said, well, wait a minute, that makes the nose point up. Why would it do that?
Mm.
He really got into it, and he called in some aviation experts and. But apparently, this all started because Airbus was able to upgrade their planes by just changing the engines. But with the design of the Boeing 737, I believe it is, it is so low to the ground, they could not just slap new engines on there. They had to reconfigure the plane, and in doing so, they messed with its, I don't know, airworthiness or its ability to fly. And he interviewed some guy that said that flying that plane, at times, if the computer weren't flying, the plane literally does not fly level. You know, the nose goes up, the nose goes down, the nose goes up, and it's in constant motion. They believe it's going to be a software fix, quote unquote.
Right.
But you know, I mean, this whole thing is just coming about because they're trying to make the plane more competitive with the competitor.
Yeah.
And because of the original design of the plane, they couldn't do that. Hmm. As far as the manuals go, that is one thing this fellow did say. He said that the assumption from Boeing is that, okay, look, you flew the old plane. All we did with this one was put a couple changes in it. You know, they thought it was going to be like 2 or 3 hours in the simulator for you to pass the test.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently in the simulator, you could pass in 2 to 3 hours, but in the real world, there are things that come up that the simulator did not address, but it's an interesting topic.
Yeah. Thing is, Paul, that can you turn on your are you on a speakerphone?
I'm actually on Google Voice.
Oh, okay. You get a weird back and forth here, but the issue that I think it is, again, it's the software that's causing the issue, and the autopilot, and whether or not the manual was properly documented is really on the airline, not the manufacturer. If you're an airline and you're going to buy this plane and you're going to train pilots to put the public in the planes, you, the airline, better know how to fly it. And if you don't, then you call Boeing up and say, hey, guys, I'm missing some information here. Can you give us some feedback? You don't complain about it later after the plane crashes. Oh, geez, that manual is kind of sketchy. That's a little too late. It's not Boeing's fault. Well, it's the airline's fault.
The pilots were complaining all along, apparently.
Well, they should complain to their airline, and then the airline talks to Boeing and say, hey, guys, I need some more information on this.
But Verge article talks about the airline or the aircraft had some unique aircraft handling characteristics.
Right.
This is because Boeing's engineers had to relocate the engines and extend the nose landing gear several inches.
That's what Paul was
to
saying.
To achieve better fuel efficiency and make all the parts fit together.
Right.
In doing so, they changed how the jet handled in certain situations.
Right. That's what Paul's
mentioning. And then they go on talk about the MCAS system, which is the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, which is designed to aid the pilot and help pilots compensate for movements caused by the realignment of the engines.
Right, so there's some sort of software that's working on making this thing fly, even though maybe it's less airworthy than it used to be with these adjustments that it made, is what you're kind of saying, Paul, too, right?
I believe so. And, what the shakeout's going to, and Rush brought up an interesting point.
Mm.
Okay, so Boeing goes around, they fix the quote-unquote known problems, and in their testing and in the FAA recertification, they say, hey, yeah, this plane's fine. They solved the problems. We can now sell this. But then again, do you really want to buy something that has been known to crash and kill people?
Right.
And the joker in the deck, for want of a better term, for Boeing, is that this plane is their future. There are only like 24 of these things worldwide. Boeing has orders for over 8,000 of these planes.
Well, we'll see what happens, Paul, but they have to go back to the drawing board, it would seem.
Sounds that way. Okay, guys, have a good day.
Thank you.
Up for your time.
All right, Paul. And that was a weird feedback, too, that Google Voice was giving us.
Yeah.
But, this is an interesting thing. It's software. It's technology. It's our government. The FAA is involved in, making sure these planes work. You know, the pilots blaming Boeing, though, for the manual. Really, they should go to their airlines. And if they don't think it's safe, it's really on the airline. And then they should go back to Boeing and they should work it all out. It shouldn't be like after the fact. Hey, you know what? I didn't. It was a little sketchy on how to take off and how to land in the book there, so I took a shot with it. No, come on.
Where's Sully Sullenberger when you need him?
Yeah, that guy knew how to fly a plane. All right, let's go to Walt in Wethersfield next. Hey, Walt, what's going on with you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Great show.
Thanks.
I've got a question about, I've heard you talk about ransomware and stuff like that many, many times.
Sure.
And thank God I haven't been affected by any of it.
Great.
And I've got several external hard drives, and one of them is USB, and I can understand why unplugging that from my computer would isolate it from potential ransomware.
Yes, it's air-gapped, as it were.
Correct.
Yep.
One of the other things I've purchased after listening to your show was a NAS device, the Western Digital PR4100, which I use with Acronis on my Windows machine to back up, and I use Time Machine on several Mac computers to back up, and it all works fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is on my network.
I
don't have any drives specifically mapped to it, and my question is, would that be susceptible to ransomware should I ever get hit with it?
Yes.
It still would, even though it's just a network-attached device.
Yes. The answer I'm going to say is generally yes. If it's not a simple map drive, it's less susceptible.
Yep.
But it's susceptible. So what you would want to do is attach a USB hard drive to that NAS and sync that data to that USB hard drive on occasion and then disconnect it.
Oh, okay.
Right? So you can do that right through the NAS technology. Do a sync. Don't do a copy. It'll continue to expand. You'll fill up your hard drive, your USB hard drive. Do a synchronization and buy a couple of them. Buy two or three of these drives. These USB drives are cheap these days.
Yep.
And on occasion, sync whatever's on that NAS, which is your backup, which is your Acronis image, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
To those external hard drive, those USB hard drive, then put them aside. And you're in good shape if you ever get hit with ransomware. You'll have to go back to the last time you did that if your NAS is compromised. If it's not compromised, you win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a hard thing to do to run that sync. You just kick it off right through the Western Digital software.
Okay, good. I've seen the sync thing there, and I just never researched it enough to really see what the purpose of it was and
that's the purpose.
How it would work.
Yep.
Okay. That's a good thought, although my NAS has more storage than probably an external USB hard drive.
Well, what is your storage? What is your storage? Is it about 6 terabytes?
I got 32 terabytes.
Yikes.
Although it's not all Acronis backups. I've got some other stuff on it too.
Yeah.
But maybe I could through the sync process, you could specify certain directories.
You can. I'm pretty sure you can. Buy the largest USB hard drive you can then, but you're right. You're going to have a hard time finding a 32-terabyte hard drive.
32-terabyte hard drive, right. Well, fortunately, it's not all used up yet, so there's a lot of free space.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, I mean, I just did a quote. I mean, a 6-terabyte drive is about $200.
Yeah, I mean, they've really come down in price, and it really works.
Yeah,
really works pretty well. So
right,
I'm very happy with it.
Good job.
All right. Well, then that answers my question.
Right.
I was hoping that it's only if it's a map drive that the stuff would.
It's technically true that the map drive is a lot easier, but I'm going to assume that you're probably still vulnerable, not knowing your config exactly.
Right.
So I'd be crazy to tell you you're safe.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Safer, but not completely safe.
Exactly. Use
there's
that.
Other steps you can still take
to protect yourself.
To protect yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, Eric.
All right. Well,
thanks a lot.
You got
it,
sir.
Good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. We're going to step out for a quick break. Nicole and John, hang on. Two lines open for you. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're here till 11 o'clock. Everything we've talked about has been posted over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com, the old-fashioned website. You can also go to thenameoftheshow.com, which also works. And over at Facebook, if you follow Tab Computer Systems on Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg deems our newsworthy, it might get into your news feed if you like us at Tab Computer Systems. And if you use Twitter, why, I have no idea you would. But if you do, you can follow us on Twitter at Tab Computer Sys, and it'll get into that feed as well. All right, let's go to John in Simsbury next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Thank you. I'm calling regarding a MacBook Air that my wife and my daughter use.
Right.
My wife uses Google, and today, over like the last week, every time she's gone on the computer, she keeps on getting this notification that, dear Apple customer, you've been redirected to Apple support page due to a virus pop-up. and it's applecenter.org. And today we tried to get into Safari, and nothing comes up. And then when we hit the icon for Google Chrome, nothing's coming up either.
Yeah, I think your browser's been hijacked.
Yes. How is there a way to fix that? Or
yeah. So if you clear your cache in the you clear the cache on the browser within the Google Chrome, if you go in there in the there's two little dots, there are three little dots on the right hand side, and go into the settings and clear your cache.
But it's not letting me do anything. When I click on Google Chrome on the bottom, nothing comes up.
The whole Chrome browser won't come up anymore?
Yeah.
Huh. All right, uninstall it. Uninstall the Chrome browser from your Apple. I'm not an Apple guy. I wouldn't know how to do that. I'm sure it's easy.
I can't get to the applecenter.com. It's saying page not found.
.org is where they were being sent.
Okay.
So I'm guessing .org is not really a legit site, is it?
I don't think it is, but we haven't had a chance to check it. It almost doesn't matter. You're being redirected there falsely, I suspect. And
okay.
In fact that your Google Chrome's not working, you know, you'd want to, I think, just uninstall it and then go to Chrome and download it again. That'll effectively clear your cache, I think. You can also run Malwarebytes for Mac. There is a Malwarebytes version for the Macintosh folks.
Okay.
And yes, the site is not legit, where it's trying to redirect you. So somewhere, your wife and your daughter?
Yeah, my wife and my daughter use the computer, so I guess they must have clicked on something.
They clicked on something or surfed somewhere. So the other piece of this is to configure OpenDNS on your network. Have you done that?
No. We were going to take a ride to the Simply Mac in Canton and see if they could help us then, too. That might be
option. You can do that, but there's nothing much you have to really do here. You don't have to pay anybody for this. This is very common.
Okay.
You just need to get rid of your Chrome, and start fresh, or run Malwarebytes for Mac, which is probably free for X number of months. So you don't have to worry about that. The last piece is the OpenDNS piece. And we've got a link up there as to how to configure OpenDNS so that your wife and daughter will probably have less chance of this occurring again.
Okay.
You know, but if you want to pay somebody, I'm not trying to take away business from that guy. I'm sure he'll charge you a similar he'll charge you more than I am to tell you what I just told you.
Okay. Well, you know, I appreciate it.
Yeah. But it's not, you know, what you're dealing with is not really tech worthy. You know, it's not really professional worthy. It's just dealing with some best practices as far as how you should be on the internet and stuff like that.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
You're welcome, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So the problem that I find out there is just because you get hit with malware or something like that, it's like the most basic of basic things that people are getting hit with. It'd be like, you know, I don't know how to give you an analogy, but it's, you don't want to spend dollars to have this corrected. You know, if you just implement OpenDNS and put in a proper antivirus program, this won't happen to you. And there's nothing that happened to his computer other than it was trying to redirect him to a malicious site. And as long as he didn't go there, which he didn't, no harm, no foul. You know, nothing happened. Nothing's going on. No reason to pay somebody. You know, it's the reason these phone scams work, is that people get a little more nervous about it than they really should. And then they go and spend good money after bad. But all right, let's go to, we're going to go to Naples, Florida, and John. And John's going to give us a hard time about how beautiful it is down there, John, aren't you?
Well, yeah, kind of.
Rub it in.
I'm sorry. You know, somebody's got to do it.
I know.
So what are you going to do?
What can we do for you, sir? Coming up against the hard break, so let's get your question in.
Okay, the question is that I'm locked out of my sbcglobal.net.
If we had a nickel for every time somebody called, actually a nickel's not worth what it used to be. But
I think I heard it before, but you know, I'm just trying to get it going again.
Okay, we'll try to find a link as to how to possibly reset that. Some information, but you really want to get away from that sbcglobal.net email box.
Yeah, you got that right.
Company hasn't existed for since my third kid was born. And he's going to college. Yeah, that's getting a long time, I think. So let me put you on hold. I think there are some sites that we can link for you to actually help you try to recover that mailbox. And then we'll get right back to you, okay?
Okay, I'll hold.
All right, so I'll put John on hold in Naples. We got Nicole in Hartford, and two lines open for you. We're here till 11 o'clock, and we'll do our best to take your computer calls, comments, questions, and concerns. Feel free to get online. And everything we've talked about has been posted, tweeted, and Facebooked. So it's all out there. You don't have to remember it. Just go over to computertalkwithtab.com, the name of the show.com, which also works, and you'll get all the links. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And Bob is Bob Shorey. He's one of the MCSEs that works at Tab. He comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Let's go right to John in Naples again, who's trying to deal with his SBC email, which he's got to change his password, right, John?
Well, yeah, and I attempted to do that many times, and it just keeps throwing me back to a front page. And yeah. I looked on a couple of trying to, you know, those help, those little message boards and that kind of thing, but yeah, nothing seems to work.
Well, we actually have an SBC Global password support site that we can give you that even includes a toll-free number you can call.
Oh, well, there's another thing. You try and call somebody, and you never get a human being.
All right. So that might – well, so I can't fix that, right?
Yeah.
So the password just changed on you, or what happened? You get locked out? Because we've heard this story before.
It says the password's not it says wrong password.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if somebody hacked – or, you know
– hacked into your
hacked
account.
Into it and changed the password on you.
That could be true.
Oh, that, yeah, it could be, but, I mean, I don't go anywhere that's stupid.
No, no. So the way that works, you know, John, is let's say you've got your SBC Global email account and you use the password of,
let me in.
Oranges. Let's use the password of oranges. That's your favorite password, and guess what? You also use it on your LinkedIn account, your bank account. You use that same oranges password on all sorts of things. And one of those other sites got hacked, and they're like, okay, John from Naples has an SBC account, and the password he used on this account was oranges. I'm going to try that on his email, and voila, they're in because you use the same password. So that's what happens these days. And so when we have all these big news articles about these breaches on the cloud where our stuff has been exposed, if people are using the same password, which unfortunately they are, I even talked to an executive who was trying to make all his passwords the same on purpose until I hopefully explained to him why that's a bad idea. You might have done that, right? So what's your password, John? Just curious.
I'm not going to tell you.
I thought I had you. one of these days I'm going to get somebody.
I will tell you this, though, Eric. It's not the same as any other password.
Okay, good. All right, so we're going to assume you weren't hacked because the password you got there is very difficult. So, are there capital letters in your password?
Oh boy, no.
All right, any? How about any numbers and?
No, this password goes back, you know, how many years?
SBC, oh, so you've been using it a long time then?
I've been using the same one, and it's always on. I just click on Yahoo Mail, and there it is.
Right, right.
Now I click on Yahoo Mail, and it says your password's not recognized.
Right. Well,
it's like, oh boy.
Well, we'll put a link here for you so that you have some ways to try to recover, according to Yahoo and AT&T, because that's who you're working with. But again, the fact that they're not home to answer the phone is the problem with the free email box, right? They don't care about you.
Right.
It's free. Why do they care about John from Naples? They don't care.
Actually, John from Wallingford. I'm just down here in Naples for the winter.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, man,
somebody's got to do it.
Yes. You're down there 6 months and a day, right, John?
No, actually, just 3 months.
Really? Well, you're 3 months more, man. You save a lot of taxes.
I'm just down here taking care of Mom.
That's awesome. But the key here, though, is that they don't really care about you because it's a free email box. And the problem you have here is that this email is connected to all sorts of things probably, right? You probably use it to access Netflix and all other things too, right?
All that stuff, yeah. Yep.
So you're going to have to deal with them. We have a couple links up here for you to call them and some advice on some of these sites as far as what you should do. Then I would tell you to get off that mail system and get in a more real one.
Now, would you say Gmail is okay or no?
They're a cloud too. Now they're maybe a better cloud. I don't know, but it's free too. So if their mail, if your mailbox gets corrupted at Gmail, do you think they care about John from Wallingford? No, they don't
care.
They
could care less.
Right.
They could care less.
Right. But it's the most important aspect of our digital lives is your email, because that's how you do password recoveries. That's how people communicate with you. It's how your all your online accounts are connected, is through your email. And that's where the bad guys are trying to get in, so they can read your email and figure out, oh, John's buying a house in Florida. Then the bad guy realizes that you want to send a check for the closing, and then the bad guy gets in the middle and says, "Wire the money over here," and your lawyer and your lawyer does that because he thinks it's you. It's messy out there, John. But I wouldn't. I would say you'd want to get a more private email system. We've recommended Proton, which again is free, but it's an encrypted mail system out of Switzerland. It was set up by folks at MIT. You can check them out.
Well, MIT.
Well, nowadays, right. Maybe MIT is not worth what it is if people are cheating to get into it. Who knows? But I would check out some other mail system other than what you're getting for free.
Okay.
All right, sir.
All right, Eric. Thank you.
Yeah, I wish I could give you the exact way to fix it, but I can't. All right. He's going to stuck dealing with the cloud. Let's go to Jeff in Farmington. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, guys. I was interested in your thoughts about an invitation I received from Google in the mail. Apparently, I'm one of 30,000 households where they want to see what I'm doing. So if I log on and I get these devices, one listens to my TV, they replace my router, there's an app I put on my phones, and all this stuff, I can earn credits, which I can exchange for prizes and stuff.
What's the Google thing called?
It's what do you mean, the Google thing?
What is it called? Is it the invite has to describe what this is? What is it?
It's a survey of some sort where they're interested in tracking what I do, and I'm able to receive credits or something.
No, I understand what you're saying. They didn't call anything in the invite.
No. It's you go onto a website, you register, they send you this these devices, and then you start tracking what you do. And I'm not so crazy about people listening on my TV what I'm doing.
I agree.
So I'm a little skeptical about participating in this, but I was interested in your thoughts.
I wouldn't do it. I mean, I don't have a Google. I don't even have one of those Google smart speakers in my house. I mean, I wouldn't have any of that stuff in my house as it is. Alexa and Google and all those folks are probably using that technology to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, but I'm going to miss out on hundreds of dollars of great prizes if I don't.
Well, you're probably better off for it. I mean, I would not do it if I were you.
Isn't that the strangest thing you've ever heard of? Talk about a violation of privacy.
Well, the thing that's weird about it, Jeff, is that, well, it's not a violation if you conform to it.
Right.
But Google itself.
Part of
go ahead.
Google Analytics.
It's part of Google Analytics?
Yeah, to find out if that's to do marketing surveys.
But they already are doing it. So what, either they're admitting their product doesn't work by, because Google's whole marketing premise is they're going to use your search results to market to you, Jeff. So they already know more about you than you probably know about yourself before they invited you to this thing.
Yeah, I know.
Now they're getting the final pieces of what you're watching on TV or what you're listening to on the radio. They're getting the final, you know, picture of Jeff. And they're going to give you hundreds of dollars in prizes.
Wow.
To know Jeff from Farmington.
Yeah, so they offer you this little widget or whatever that costs them about 30 cents.
Yeah.
You know, and then they say, oh, but you can get this on the stores for $59.95.
Yeah. But what, so you found it? You actually found some articles, Bob?
Well, I'm getting a little headaches, but it's saying Google Analytics Tracking Quiz and Survey Master is what I'm getting.
Mm. And I don't think it's that, though. This seems a little even more specific because it's giving out the 30,000 people. But I wouldn't do it, Jeff, if I were you. You should be skeptical, as far as I'm concerned, unless you don't mind, you know, giving Google everything about you, the final pieces of your life, Jeff. And maybe your life is so boring you don't care.
That's a possibility. I don't think I'm going to be doing it, though. But thanks.
All right. And we'll try to find more information about it, so we'll put a link up there for everybody else.
Hey, thanks.
All right, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I don't know. Google's whole market. Their whole marketing proposition is they know you already, and then they're going to sell you specifically. I can't believe they need even more on you. But to actually survey 30,000 people with a mailer, that's just very strange. So we'll step off for a quick break. Four lines wide open. So you guys are early. You started early with us. Y'all decided the weather's gorgeous and you're going to enjoy it, and that's, I don't blame you. But we're going to be here till 11 o'clock, and feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. If you're not back If you're not there when we come back, we'll talk about our kids. We warned you.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. So you guys don't want us to talk about our kids, and I don't blame you. Don't you hate that when other parents do that? I do, too. Let's go back to your calls. We're going to go right to Frank in Winstead. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
I got a fix for that John guy there with his email hacked.
Well, we're not sure it's hacked. The password doesn't work anymore for his SBC Global.
Yeah, well, mine did the same thing.
Yeah, okay.
And I tried everything. I went twice. Try to recover it and all. Both. I called ATT. Within 2 minutes, they had me a new email, a new password.
All right, so he does have to call. That'll be the best solution.
Call ATT and they'll just get a new password. I know he had that for a long time, but
yeah, we told him that, but he said he can't get anybody in the line. But maybe he'll try again.
All right, boss.
Thanks, Frank.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye. Yeah, just call the guys. You know, that makes sense. Sometimes it's that easy. If they answer the phone. Let's go on to Kevin in Hartford next. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Eric. I've got a question for you. I've got a brand new, well, I bought it in December, but it's a new Microsoft Surface laptop.
Yeah, it's pretty new.
Yeah, I'm curious. Does it make sense, or does it make a difference if I turn it on and off each night, or basically turn it off like at night and then turn it on in the morning?
In its lifespan?
Yeah.
No, you can turn it off. That's what I would do every time if you're not using it.
There's a rule of thumb. I think it's 6 or 1/2 dozen of the other.
Yeah.
One theory says that the stress of shutting it down and firing it back up causes it to wear out sooner. And the other one says just let it run. And, you know, the other thing is shut it down and save it. So
turn it off.
I think that you'll have... If you had 10 people in a room, you'll have 5 on one side and 5 on the other.
Yeah.
So,
but he's asking us, Bob, so we're telling him to turn it off, right? Or do you think he should leave it on?
I think we're kind of at opposite ends because I don't turn mine off. I leave mine running 24/7.
Crazy. So, I like a nice clean boot. I like a nice clean boot.
I like to reboot it once a month, whether it needs it or not.
Yeah. All right, so it's up to you, Kevin. Flip a coin and take Bob's advice or mine.
Sounds good.
All right, sir. You got it. But a fresh reboot is always good. But leaving it on, though, you know, your battery is not going to charge as fast.
I'm talking about like a desktop.
This is a Surface, so he's more mobile.
The laptop is a different issue.
Yeah. Let's go to John in Woodbury. John, what's cooking out there, bud? You there, John?
Yep.
All right. What's going on out there in Woodbury?
Canon printer.
All right, can you pick up the phone?
Yeah, just give me a second.
Yep. Got a Canon printer.
No.
You all right?
Yeah, so I got the speaker off. And when I print from my computer, I get blank lines across, skips a line or two.
Okay.
And if I put something in and just copy it, it prints perfectly.
So is it a multifunction printer, a copier, a scanner, and a printer?
Yeah.
All right. So when you copy it, you get a perfect image, but when you print it, it's cutting out and giving you garbage.
Well, it's like the words have like a blank line all the way across through the sentence.
Oh, wow.
Not
so the font is giving you the character, the T, let's say, has an empty space in the middle of the line.
Correct.
Okay.
So it goes all the way across the page.
Right. But if you do a copy, it prints fine, meaning you know the printer's okay. There's not an ink issue. There's not a head issue. I think it's a font issue.
I think it's a driver issue.
When I'm running out of ink.
Say that again?
It'll do this when I'm running out of ink, but it'll do it all the time.
Right.
When I print a test page from the computer, I get the same...
The same result?
Same missing sections.
Hmm. So it could be a driver issue. But a copy works fine.
Yes.
Every time until you're running out of ink.
Right.
Well, we think it's a driver issue.
I think it's a driver issue.
So you go out to Canon's website and see if they have an updated driver for that printer.
Okay.
And if they do, install it, and if this problem goes away, you're good. If it doesn't, I'm not sure what's going on, because if you can copy the same mechanism being used in copying your printer head, the ink is all the same. It shouldn't differentiate between.
Yeah, it sounds more like a software issue than a hardware issue.
Yeah. So try the update, yeah, John.
I can't find it where like I was doing online searches. I can't find where anybody else is having the same problem.
No, but you should go out to the Canon site and see if they have a new printer driver for that make and model printer. And do that first. You haven't done that, right? That's probably the original.
No, I haven't done that.
Yeah. So do that first, and you probably will have solved the issue by doing the update. How old's that printer?
Oh.
That old, huh?
Probably 3-4 years.
No, that's not too bad. But download the driver. That's the only thing you can do now, because we don't think it's a hardware issue based on what you told us about the copy.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, I'll do that. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck.
Right.
Bye-bye. All right. We're going to go to Stu in Marlboro next. Stu, what's going on with you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
So I'm having this issue with my desktop. It'll shut down. I leave it on all the time. It'll shut down. And I go to push the start button on it, and nothing happens. And I find that if I unplug it from the power supply and then plug it back in, I'm able to boot it up, and I get, and initially I was just getting, the Windows, didn't shut down properly. Do you want to, boot in safe mode or whatever?
Right.
The past couple of times this happened, when the computer boots up, I get an error message that says CPU fan error. And then the only option I have is to go into the BIOS program.
Wow.
And I do that, and then, I just, escape out of it without saving any changes, and it goes on and continues to boot up. So,
right.
I guess I'm kind of wondering, do you think it might be something wrong with my CPU fan, or is it a motherboard issue, or?
I think you got it's power options.
Power options?
Yeah, what's happening is it's going to sleep or hibernate.
Okay.
And so then when you go to push the button, nothing happens because, like, the hard drive and there are certain things that are shut off. So
okay, but the lights aren't on. Even if it's sleeping, wouldn't the lights be on the desktop?
You might get a blinking light, but
no, they pretty much are going to be quiet until you hit the button, and it should come out of sleep, but it may not.
It could also be a button problem.
That's true.
Because you never shut the machine down, right, Stu?
I didn't shut it down. It just shut down on its own.
And if the CPU fan has failed, it could be overheating and just dying.
That'll shut it off.
That'll shut it right off.
Okay.
So I would trust your warning that the CPU fan is bad, probably gummed up with a bunch of dust.
Yeah.
And you need to open that sucker up and blow it out.
Get a can of canned air.
Right. And then see if that thing is spinning when you have it open. See if the CPU fan is spinning. If it's not, that's your problem. You're overheating and it's crashing.
Okay.
But Bob could be right, too. It could be a power saving issue. But I think it's just, you got to trust it. You got to trust the air.
Okay.
All right, Stu. How old is the machine?
All right. I'll try to clean out the CPU fan. And if it still happens, then probably replace the CPU fan.
How old is the machine?
I've been pulling parts in and out of it. It's probably maybe somewhere between 2 and 3 years old.
Oh, it's still young enough. Yeah, definitely you'd replace the CPU fan then, yes.
Yep.
All right, Stu.
All right, great, guys. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, our pleasure. We're all out of time. All of you guys, the lines are jammed up. But we do start between 9 and 11, just to reiterate. But I want to thank all you guys for joining us on this Saturday morning. Everything we talked about has been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com, the name of the show.com, which also works. If you follow us on Facebook and you like Tab Computer Systems, the news will get into your news feed if Mr. Zuckerberg deems it worthy. I mean, they had a recent server outage over there in Facebook, they said. They were down all over the planet. It was part of our news. We didn't get a chance to talk about it. So I want to thank Matt for producing. Dr. Leslie will be up next, so stick around for that.
See you next week.